Continuation prayer of that game theory 5, the world game. This is good, actually. And what was it I wanted to say now? Well, he's talking here again, the hierarchy, the secret societies, the people down there. I'm starting to see something here based on this that I'm trying to communicate here. And I'm talking Dharma. I think I want to have a playlist here called Dharma or something like that. And that book that seems to be coming now. Because this is what we're talking about. If someone may wonder what is going on here, talking societies and all these structures. But Dharma is about how to live in a society or privately, personally, individualistically, both at once, because we're all social beings, in ways that work, that correspond to reality, that makes our society and lives harmonious, healthy, wealthy in the sense we have what we need, happy, for real. Not just big false smiles when someone asks you, are you happy? And so on. I mean, if you really want to analyze it, in essence, that's really what should be at the very, very foundation of a human society, right? And then you have the bull of Dharma there, given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, standing on four legs. And what are those legs? Well, we are talking about important qualities, ethics, honesty. Compassion. These kind of fundamental principles for how humans, you know, develop their consciousness and act on that then, because that's what you do. You act always out of a consciousness, who I am, what is going on, what shall I do, and why, where will it lead me, what will it give me? So these questions, this is what we are talking about here when we speak about Dharma, that knowledge. Sanatana Dharma means the real, eternal, actually real. Life, understanding of life. The world and ourselves. And again, the interesting thing is that if you look at the Indian tradition, for instance, when you speak about Sanatana Dharma, they often do it to emphasize that this is not some religion or religious institution or like that. It's life. It's about life. Your life, my life, our life as a human collective. And how to make it work well. So, and when in all of this, then we see the empires coming up, crumbling, coming up, crumbling, another one up there, growing, great, and then crumbling. And we're looking at this thinking, well, do I want to be part of this? Do I want to serve those leaders or those leaders? Or am I fed up with this? And if so, what is the alternative? And I've been thinking about this and talking about this for a year or so now, the past few months at least. Because I think I'm starting to see Hej. Jag vet inte, jag har inte, du får tala med de som bestämmer om huset. Jag bara bor här, hyresgäst.
Vem bestämmer?
Det står telefonnummer där på dörren. And I really can see, I mean, when I grew up, at least it seemed to me, I grew up in the 60s, late 50s, 60s. I was a child. And it seems, still seems to me that a little town, 10,000 people, where almost everyone knew the names of each other at least. Produced locally almost everything we needed. And yeah, of course, there was a government up there in the big capital city. But most of the decisions that mattered for us was done in our local government for the city. Where again, there were discussions and debates, and people knew the ones sitting there who were not, you know, up in the high heavens, but just, you know, some of us. Some sitting there because they do good work, some sitting there because they think they are something. And then I heard about this anarcho-syndicalism, which seems to be a political theory or whatever, putting more of the, you know, responsibility down the local level and not so much these big rulers up there, not so much that huge big hierarchy. And that's how it used to be. In Sweden, of course, you had local lords, but even before that, there were less of them before feudalism came. And I think it was like that all over the world from time to time. And now we tend to talk about that old communalism living as primitive, as something, you know, in the primitive African villages or something like that. But I really don't think so. I think they are more natural, organic structures where the people in a town, and again in the Indian Vedic culture, I heard it's recommended that a town or a city shouldn't be bigger than 50,000 people, which makes sense to me. Because they were, I understood, these villages and towns, they grew from, you know, a family or two or three that started intermarrying and being friends, and others came, and they all knew each other. And they all thought that we are working here on this land for us. It belongs to us. Not that it's for me, and you should, you know, if I don't get what I want, then I kill you or whatever. So, as little as I know about political or, you know, whatever, science, statesmanship or whatever they call it, the picture starts to really emerge by studying the Indian traditional teachings there of Dharma and how their societies seem to have been looking like, you know, in the Indus Valley and so on. And the same thing in the West, in Africa and Mediterranean and so on, and up here in Sweden as well. And studying this, that whole game theory, this understanding of how people function socially, interaction, the cooperation, or the wars appear, and, you know, whatever, hierarchies and crumbling of them. So my conclusion is, and when I say this now, it doesn't even seem like I'm concluding, stating some theory of mine, but mainly even just stating the fact that I see. But this seems to be where it all lands, eventually, over and over. You know, when these artificial structures based on adharmic, vikarmic ideas that are maya, that are illusions, that do not correspond to the sanatana, you know, dharma, the real way, as the Chinese say. The Tao, or the way that Confucius talked about. We find it all over, and all we need to do is to really look at those teachings and see the principle given in them and how those principles can also be applied to our societies that we live in today. Not that we need to, I'm now a Tao follower, so I should dress up as a Tao monk. And we should all have Chinese culture all over the world. I should dress in Indian clothes and build Indian temples. Where everyone should live. Not, I mean, seriously. The principles are there, and they should be applied according to time and circumstances. Yukta Vairagya is even there in the Indian teachings, urging us to that. Not just imitating, copying, but understanding the actual teachings and applying them as makes sense to our situation. And yes, I can see, and I'm already seeing it a little bit here and there. Villages, we have this concept, eco-villages now, here in Sweden, where you build a villa area, housing area, with nice little park there in the middle, and, you know, different amenities, people working together, it becomes cheaper. Then, more secure. If someone has a problem, then there are others who can help. In some suburb or some village on the countryside. And there seem to be plenty of those that are now emptied. Where you have like-minded people living, if you think of a village or a small town, where, for instance, if you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava or Vaishnava, where everyone is like, living that lifestyle, you know, vegetarians and considering themselves devotees of God, they all believe in God, that God is goddess, God are the parents of us all, and we're ultimately family, brethren and sisters. This makes sense. And some grow food, maybe they have a farm outside of town. Some make clothes, some make this, some make that, and then they share, maybe even making a, you know, sharing system. Don't even need official money, which may be valueless or not, but here we can make our own money. So I would say that it's possible, and I've seen it almost, and I'm sure my parents saw it, to develop such self-sustainable villages or communities. I mean, there are some such attempts, but still being very dependent on the products sold by the big corporations and produced by the cheap laborers in slave countries, slave nations. But the question is then, you know, what's going to happen when that flow stops? And I think it's wise now to at least see that possibility. And those who are sitting on a farm community with their own land and this and that have a great advantage. But it may be good to try and get the social environment there, the healthy and nice. And I say that this Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, in this sense, which is not, again, it's not any speculation on my part, but it's all there in the teachings of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and so on, of the Vaishnava Acharyas, or this ISKCON tradition, for instance. So And sometimes these ideas which establish Vanashram Dharma, which many take as just dividing people, everyone up in four classes and castes, and have four social, you know, we call these four social orders and these four stages of life. Again, costumes and titles and roles. And then someone should rule over and make sure everyone does their thing. But I think it's rather about this. See how to be able to live together, or at least leave each other in peace, allowing each other to live our own lives and be friends, although we may have differences of opinion. But also, you know, these kind of communities or little villages or just people getting houses close to each other, sharing and getting their social lives satisfied and so on. I mean, this is the good news in all this crumbling empire story, that it can start with just a few people buying some land. So I think I would say, if you have money today, buy some land. Anyway.